Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. My name is Dave Page, and I am a paramedic with Allina Medical Transportation and an instructor at Inver Hills Community College. I'm here with
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Josh Salzman, director of the Critical Care Research Center at Regents Hospital in St. Paul.
And Dr. Aaron Burnett, the assistant medical director at Regents Hospital EMS.
And Charlie Lick, medical director of Allina Medical Transportation in the Twin Cities.
We're going to be discussing a study on sepsis. The title, it was just published in Academic Emergency Medicine. It's actually online, e-published first. And it is Arriving by Emergency Medical Services Improves Time to Treatment Endpoints for Patients with Severe Sepsis or Septic Shock. Dr. Roger Band is the lead author, along with a whole host of folks that participated in this particular project. And I'll give a quick synopsis before we jump into some interesting discussion about this. This was a two-year study looking at an urban emergency department. It's actually Philadelphia in between 2005 and 2006. And the objective was to see if patients who arrived by ambulance were more likely to receive treatments for sepsis, in particular septic shock, so fluids, antibiotics, and whether or not they'd actually have better or worse outcomes if they came in by ambulance. So that's the only real difference between the two groups that they thought might make a difference. They cited a couple of different past articles that have shown that just arriving by ambulance improves outcomes in all sorts of types of patients, STEMI patients, and in 2010, Studnick had done another paper on arriving by ambulance with sepsis that was also favorable. So they looked at 963 patients who were admitted for sepsis all over the age of 18 and compared the time to antibiotics and found a significant difference. The ambulance patients got antibiotics in about 116 minutes versus 152 minutes when they were, so a 42-minute difference there or so, 40-minute difference. And then also the time to initiating IV fluid resuscitation, 34 minutes for EMS and 68 minutes for the group that came in by private vehicle or just showed up. And they also were trying to figure out if in fact there was a difference in outcome. Interestingly enough, they did not find a difference in overall mortality, but they have some good discussion points, which we will address here in a minute as to why that might have been. Overall, I think I'll just jump in here to start with and say, obviously, a great study for EMS because it shows again that EMS does make a difference. So everybody keeps arguing whether it does or it doesn't. It does have some limitations since it was a hospital-based study, and we're talking about it's a retrospective study, and they had a hard time identifying which patients were actually really EMS patients versus patients that were they couldn't identify some of the people who were whether they were ambulance or not is the problem. So and then some interesting statistics just about the number of the thousands of people, 750,000 annual cases of severe sepsis, so big problem in the U.S. and mortality rates that are high, 25 to 50% is I think what I read here. So a really nasty problem that is overall unrecognized. This was in an ED that already had sepsis protocols in place. So they made a comment about whether it was generalizable to other systems that may or may not already have policies in place kind of looking for sepsis. And so that part was interesting as well. So what do you guys think?
Well, clearly this is a big problem. And there's been plenty of good data that has shown improved outcomes and decreased mortality rate with the time-limited steps of early fluid resuscitation and early antibiotics. So this study helps support that. And really, I think that this is going to be a next big opportunity for EMS as we work together as a system, improving sepsis care. This is woefully low diagnosed and recognized not early enough on, certainly by people in the pre-hospital field. This is a new deal. And I think a lot of our people in our hospitals and emergency departments, that we've really got a big opportunity here too. So I think there's going to be a lot more to come on this. And I thought it was an interesting study.
Yeah, I agree. I really would have liked to have seen a mortality benefit. So, you know, this study is probably not a home run, but it's a solid double. Decreasing the...
Let's go with baseball.
Decreasing the time to IV fluids and the time to antibiotics is one of those first steps on the way to saving these patients' lives. And so while there wasn't a mortality benefit shown, those preliminary things that we know do help and do work definitely got to these patients quicker. I would have liked to have seen them talk about how much fluid these patients got by the medics before they even got to the hospital, because I think that would have even taken this one step farther downrange and really shown that, you know, IV volume resuscitation is a key component of treating these septic patients. And we do that in the field. And so that's one data point I would have liked to have seen them discuss a little bit more.
But interestingly, who's got a sepsis protocol for pre-hospital around the table?
I hear crickets.
So, see, there's a problem.
We agree. And I'm going to address the mortality thing because since you brought it up, I think it's important to say they also were surprised at the lack of difference here in mortality. But they point out that the patients that came in by ambulance were more sick. They had bigger problems. And if you look at their table here, their lactates were worse. And their Apache 2 score is worse. So in one case, it's 19 by ambulance versus 17 by private vehicle. And the lactate was had a range of 0.7 to 26.5. So it's possible, and they mentioned this in their limitations, is that these patients were sicker that came in by ambulance, and so more likely to have a bad outcome, which actually skews the study more towards saying it was beneficial to come in by ambulance, and had they been able to deal with that variable a little bit differently, they might have been able to notice it a little bit better. They definitely point that out. They had to normalize some of the values, and Josh is our resident expert on statistics, so some of those numbers get interesting because, you know, obviously they had to account for sicker patients coming in by ambulance. And they didn't know how much fluid the patients got by ambulance. So initiation of fluid resuscitation was a good point. Yep.
They do take into account, if you are looking at the actual paper and table two, they take the variables that were different between these two groups and adjust for them. So essentially that wipes out any difference between them and rerun their analyses. And you still see no mortality difference. But if you look under that table, it does. If you look at the relative risk score and the confidence interval and the p-value associated with it, it may be that if you expanded this out to a larger group of patients, because they didn't hypothesize that they were going to find a difference, they were just kind of mining a data set, but they may just not have had enough patients to show that difference in the end. So. But that's, from a methodology standpoint, that's the right thing to do, is once you find that there are differences between the groups, then rerun your model because you've adjusted for those differences and see if there is a benefit or not. The other thing that I think is really important to think about is 119 minutes is almost 2 hours. So it's a long time. So even though there was a difference between the two groups of 40 minutes, what you may find with an implementation of a protocol in EMS for early recognition and treatment is that if you were to start your treatment of sepsis at, you know, from time of arrival and it was 30 minutes, that you may then see a mortality difference in that population to design a prospective trial. So if you recognize it earlier, you begin treatment earlier, will that make a difference? You didn't see it here because the difference was 40 minutes, but if you had a larger window of difference, would that matter?
You know, a lot of times I think the things that make the biggest difference for the patients are the things that we don't get that excited about. I mean, how many people got a good rush of adrenaline after they gave an aspirin to their STEMI patient? How many people get excited about giving fluid to someone who has a fever and a urinary tract infection that's now in the blood? I mean, we don't get excited about that. Those aren't the things that, you know, we look forward to doing on the calls, but sometimes they're the biggest things for the patient. Getting fluid, volume resuscitating these septic shock patients. I mean, it's shock. So getting these fluids on board can make a huge difference for patients. And I think studies like this are really going to get us to start focusing more on that on the pre-hospital side.
Well, I think that, you know, Josh, you bring up a good point that sepsis is not exciting because really, I mean, you're picking up the little lady who's got pneumonia and she's a little sick, running a low-grade fever. Yeah, let's just take her to the hospital. Code 2. That's fine. You know, but I think it really comes down to a failure of understanding or a lack of understanding on our part of really how bad sepsis can be. I mean, we get them to the hospital and they're doing okay, you know, a few hours later. I mean, these patients are fighting for their lives. They're on multiple pressors up in the ICU. And so I think if we did a better job, and studies like this help, but if we did a better job educating our EMTs and our paramedics at recognizing, hey, look, sepsis kills and it kills quickly. And so you have to take this seriously and you have to treat these patients aggressively. And even though they look like they're fine and their pressures might be okay and they might be a little tachycardic, you should still be dumping 2 liters of fluid into these patients and getting them into the hospital quickly.
So what about improvement of our pre-hospital care for these patients? Is it time to carry antibiotics on the ambulances, or let's talk about point of care lactate, because this study sets up point of care lactate testing.
Well, in fact, we're doing a little trial of a point of care lactate device, and we've just started, and our numbers are small, but it's correlating very well with the lab lactate. And of course, we've done education for our crew, so they're recognizing sepsis as part of this, even to do the test. They're taking tympanic temperatures also, which are correlating pretty well too. Once again, very small numbers. Hopefully we'll discuss this study here at some point in time in the future. But interestingly, the patients who get identified with a high lactate level in the field, they have a decrease in time to starting antibiotics, average 135 minutes. So that's a huge difference. And as we talk about this point previously, yeah, we're getting this 2 hours into this versus 2 hours and 45 minutes into this. Does that extra time really make a difference and identify this too?
Yeah, I tell you, if I knew there was an ambulance coming in and that patient had an elevated lactate, I might not know why that lactate's elevated. You know, they could have a GI bleed, they could be septic, but there's something bad going on because your lactate doesn't climb for any good reason.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if in the future that some of our monitors have built-in sort of sepsis warning lights that go out when they have certain hemodynamic properties that may get them into that bucket. You're right, Aaron, doesn't mean that they're septic, but if the word's flashing at you, sepsis, or consider this, I think we're going to recognize and identify these people earlier.
And we, in our services about a year ago, just finished a similar project where we used a screening tool to identify patients who may potentially be septic and then performed a lactate reading. And it was, again, a small group. It was all nursing home patients. And what we found is potentially the tool we used probably wasn't the greatest, but paramedics are very good at identifying when people don't have sepsis, but they're really bad at when they actually have it to recognize it. And we compared the paramedic diagnosis or assignment of potential sepsis with the ED review of the ED record and an independent reviewer's assigning of sepsis based on the chart. And what we find is that it's really it's an education thing primarily, and the more focus you can put on that, the better. I think using lactate routinely, in our study, we used the screening tool first, and only if they passed through one level did the patient then have a lactate measurement. But if you were able to put that lactate measure in that first bucket of all patients who meet your first little criteria, then we may pick that up faster in the field and as Aaron said, and as you said, Charlie, too, is that response in the emergency department when you say, I've got a lactate of 5.9 will be very different than saying, I think this patient is potentially septic.
Yeah, I think the thing about shock, and so we're talking about septic shock here, but there's other kinds too, like you guys all know. You know, the thing about shock is it we're really learning more and more that it takes laboratory studies to really track how these patients are doing, whether or not they have it and whether or not they're responding to your treatments. Certainly the people who've already fallen off that compensation curve are often very obvious, but for these patients, whether they're bleeding, whether they have an infection, or whether their MI is now tipping over into a cardiogenic shock state, a lot of times it takes measurements like lactates, like pH measurements, because those declare abnormalities much earlier than the traditional vital sign changes that we have followed.
I'm also going to direct people to look at the podcast we did on end-tidal CO2 measurement to look at shock, because that again, gives us a nice little picture of whether somebody's in an acidotic state. I also want to point out one of the things that I particularly liked about the way that the authors reported information in the study is that they describe a little bit of the problem with data collection in a system where there's both a fire department-based ambulance, the City of Philadelphia ambulance, and our fire department ambulances, and a lot of private ambulance services that bring in patients from nursing homes that are septic. And so it was nice to see them compare and say, you know what, all of these patients that come in, whether they're coming in by 911 or not, are getting the benefit of this ambulance care. But it is harder to keep track of these EMS systems and to do research in systems where not everyone is calling 911. They're calling a private ambulance service and bringing a patient in differently. So it does present a research problem to keep track of all this. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to another podcast for the PCRF forum.